elected this position. I had to give up my most recent one, so just no time. But anyway, I'm happy to be here, and thank you.
We're happy that you're here as well. And we also have a couple new pages. I'm going to put you on the spot if you'd like to just quickly introduce yourself, please. Go ahead. We can hear you.
I'm Joseph Stevenson. Right. First time page, so me thing, let's go.
All right. Thank you, Joseph.
I'm Allison Herbal.
Allison, thank you. So we're gonna put you to the test and work you hard today, okay? All right.
Mr. Chair, did you know that, Mr. Chair?
There you are. Representative Fabian, thank you. Is that?
You think we're in Disneyland or something?
What the heck? Right?
I won't put Allison through that, but she told us earlier in the Environment Natural Resources Committee that she did work at Disneyland and she was a costume character or something. So if you ever need a costume, you've got a good access to one there.
Nice. That'll be next meeting. We expect that. All right, Allison? I want you to dress up. All right, very good. We digress. All right, we're going to move in. As everybody knows, what we'd like to do is we like to recognize people, give special recognition. Just for a reminder, or if anybody is new, Representative Eklund is new to the committee, it could be anybody that has done special things in agriculture. The very first person we recognized, for instance, was, I believe, Mr. Tom Peterson, lobbyist for Farmers Union. We've had members from the department. So, and all across the state, urban, rural, et cetera. Today we have a very special recognition, and we're going to turn to Vice Chair Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is a great honor of mine to recognize Dr. Bill Hartman for his service to the state and Minnesota agriculture on the occasion of his retirement. We're going to miss him. Whereas Dr. Bill Hartman graduated from the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine in 1978, after 4 years in practice, he returned to the University of Minnesota where he completed a pathology residency in the Veterinarian Diagnostic Laboratory and received his master's degree in Veterinarian Anatomic Pathology. He joined the United States Department of Agriculture Veterinarian Services as a Veterinarian Medical Officer in 1985. And whereas in 1988, Dr. Hartman joined the Minnesota Board of Animal Health as a Senior Veterinarian managing ruminant disease programs and was appointed the Executive Director of the Board and State Veterinarian in 2001. And whereas, under his direction, the board has detected and fought against diseases such as chronic wasting disease and porcine epidemic diarrhea, and he led the state and federal response to the last year's high pathogenic avian influenza outbreak that killed 9 million birds over 100 farms throughout the country's largest turkey-producing state. And whereas, all told, the outbreak cost the state economy $650 million, with the board spending about $2 million of its own money. Through his leadership, Minnesota has become a national example of how to fight avian influenza. And whereas Dr. Hartman also led the fight against the bovine tuberculosis starting back in 2005, this disease affected cattle and deer in northwestern Minnesota. It took about 6 years to address. Whereas he has been instrumental in protecting Minnesota's livestock farmers and addressing the challenges facing them. Now 65 years old, over 30 years of service, he has earned a relaxing and joyful retirement. Now therefore, be it resolved by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration of the House of Representatives of the State of Minnesota that it thanks and commends Dr. Bill Hartman for his long and distinguished career as a leader in protecting animal health, and extends best wishes to him for his retirement. This is signed by Kurt Dowd, the Speaker of the House, Joyce Pepin, Chair of Rules and Legislative Administration, and our Chair, Rod Hamilton. And congratulations to you, Dr. Hartman. I have to inform the rest of you before you all honor him. He happens to be my second cousin. He is my mother's first cousin, and so I'm very honored to recognize you. Thank you.
thank you very much, Representative Keel. And the state of Minnesota obviously is in great hands. And Dr. Hartman and I were talking a little bit before committee, and one of the things that he has done a great job at is surrounding himself with wonderful, wonderful people. So I know that the state will be in good hands as he moves forward. We want to congratulate you once again and enjoy your retirement. And we also know how to get a hold of you in case we need anything, so don't get too comfortable. We do have a few questions here. First on the list was Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question is the new member, Rob Ekman from International Falls. I was just wondering, you're a 1976 graduate of International Falls High School, is that correct?
That is correct, Representative Sundin.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Ekman, who is the best-looking high school graduate that year?
We do want to know this, Representative Ekman.
Well, there's a source of contention, Mr. Chair and Representative Sundin, and I would gladly claim that honor.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's going to be a long year for you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm happy to take a vote on that one. Yeah. All right. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to circle back to Dr. Hartman. I've had the misfortune of having the bovine TB outbreak in the heart of my district, and we had some of the HPAI in my district, as many people know. And I just want to say thank you to Dr. Hartman on the record. I know that when I tried doing some work to some property tax credits with regards to the bovine TB stuff, Dr. Hartman was more than willing to help out and to testify, and I just really respect the way he conducts himself. You know, there's a lot of people that kind of transcend what we do around here, and he is one of those figures that does. He seems to be able to do his work in a respectful, highly respectful way, and I'm just very, very thankful to have had the opportunity to work with you, Dr. Hartman. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to, as long as we're talking about the avian flu from last year, remind everyone that the rock farmers on the Iron Range need help, and I hope that over the next few days that we can taper down and have things go out the way we did for the turkey farmers around the state and pass a clean unemployment extension for them and work bipartisanly to do that.
Thank you, Representative Metza. Thank you for your comments. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those that have seen me around from last year, each week my daughter is kind enough to make cookies for people in my office, and I have some extra ones, and I don't want to bring them back home, so I brought these cookies that my daughter have made from good Minnesota products. We have sugar beet sugar in here. We've got flour. I don't think the raisins are from Minnesota, but I'm going to pass these around. I only apologize that as I pass them around, there's not enough for the entire room. So there may be some unfairness going on, but please enjoy these on behalf of me and my daughter. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And make sure you thank your daughter for us as well.
Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to express my personal thanks to Dr. Hartman. Before we got into the bovine TB issue and got that fixed under your great leadership, and also the avian flu episode that we had last year, I met Dr. Hartman at the Aiken High School a number of years ago when a bull elk 3 miles down the road from me tested positive on an elk farm. And so we went through a kind of a mini test run of what happened with the tuberculosis issue with what we had to do with the deer population there. And I can just say that Dr. Hartman was a key catalyst in getting the Minnesota DNR, the federal folks, and everybody else on the same page, because we went through a very similar situation with what we had to do with the white-tailed deer immediately around that elk farm. And to this day, knock on wood, we've got no chronic wasting disease in the white-tailed deer up in Aiken County. And this was long before we had the issue down south in the Rochester area. So again, thank you for your leadership, and please don't go too far. We still got your cell phone number, because you really have done a huge service in the state of Minnesota over your career. So again, thank you.
Indeed. Thank you, Representative Lewick. All right, well, we're going to move to our presenters. If we can ask members from the department to move forward. I'll ask Ms. Place. We have a new face here, and I texted her this morning. I said, I'm tired and I'm crabby, and I'm going to take it out on all the testifiers. So we're going to break you in right today. So if you would please state your name for the record, who you represent, and tell us a little bit about yourself, if you don't
okay,
mind.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Whitney Place. I am the Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. I grew up in Okabena, Minnesota, which is in Representative Hamilton's district. I have a farming family background. My dad was an agriculture teacher and my mom taught social studies. And so I went to the University of Minnesota, got my degree in applied plant science and my master's in science, technology, and environmental policy. I've been with the department for 4 years, most recently working with the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program.
Well, we're happy that you're here. And, you know, I was going to make a joke about the person that you're filling the role in for. However, and that would have been if it was Mr. Santo Cruz. But if we all remember, we had Andrea there prior to yourself. So if I make a joke, it's in reference of Santo. All right?
We understand, right? Mr. Chair.
All right. Yeah. Or Diablo, as we call it. Right? Everybody knows that. Santo means saint in Spanish, so we call him Diablo, which is devil. Right? He's earned that. He has absolutely earned it. I think the world loves him. So welcome. If you'd like to move into your testifier.
Great. Yes, correct? Mr. Chair. First, we have Dr. Bill Hartman, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. And he's going to talk about our response to high pathogen avian influenza.
All right, thank you. Doctor, if you would please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair and members of both committees, thank you for the invitation to this meeting. My name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health. And first, I'd like to just say thank you. I got a lot of thanks there. That felt very good. And I thought when I took this job that this was going to be the worst part of my job, having to come to the legislature. Turns out it was the best part of my job. I've enjoyed it immensely. You are good people to work with. We appreciate everything you're doing for the state of Minnesota, so acknowledgement back to you. So what I understand that you want to hear from me this morning is how did we spend the money that you gave us on highly pathogenic avian influenza. And the board's mission is to protect the domestic animals of the state. And last year, last spring, the Board of Animal Health and the poultry industry faced the most difficult assignment we've had ever in Minnesota with livestock or poultry or the Board of Animal Health with the high path AI outbreak. And I wanted to just, Representative Keel, you mentioned that it was over 100 farms. It was 110 farms that were affected directly, and they were in 23 different counties. And again, you mentioned that it was about 9 million birds that had to be depopulated or that died from the disease or had to be depopulated to stop the spread of the disease. So it was a big deal. And I thought I'd show a couple of slides just to remind you of how devastating this disease can be. How do I do this? Oh, there we go. That's what the virus did to a barn full of turkeys. There were 20,000 turkeys in that barn. And early on, we had to wait for results of the testing from the lab in Ames, Iowa, the National Veterinary Services Lab. So it took a week before we could get to this farm and do anything at it. And all of the birds in that barn, except about 13 of them, died. So 20,000 birds that died in a week. So it was a difficult, difficult disease. Yeah, next slide. So to the cost of this outbreak in the United States, so it didn't just happen in Minnesota. Mostly it was in the upper Midwest, but it was on the West Coast and all the way down to Missouri and Arkansas.
So the federal government spent just under $1 billion fighting this disease. It was the biggest foreign animal disease outbreak the United States has ever seen. 70 million of that was in indemnity for birds in just in Minnesota. And you mentioned the economic impact to the state of Minnesota of $647 million. The reason for the size of that economic impact is that it didn't just affect those farms that had the disease, that 110 farms, but it affected businesses around them because we had to set up control areas within 10 kilometers of each of these premises. And so in that 10-kilometer area, there were businesses like hatcheries and processing plants and feed mills that affected all of their businesses. And then I think the most telling of it was the impact it had on international trade. Essentially, every country in the world stopped imports of product from Minnesota, and most cases from the United States. So it had a big economic impact on the United States as well as just Minnesota. So I just wanted to share with you this slide that shows how the money was spent that we got, and then I'll go into the details of what we received. I put down 68%, but if you add the people costs and the travel costs that those people had, really 79% of the money that we were given was spent on just hiring people. We hired 20 temporary employees. We still have some of those people with us. A lot of them are gone already. And then we had people working on this outbreak 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and so there was a lot of overtime and travel costs for our employees as well involved in that. One of the parts to this that I want to point out is the courier service. That was 4% of the budget. That was so that we could get these samples from these farms that were out in the Willmar area to our lab in St. Paul. Well, I'm going to talk in a minute about that laboratory and what's going on with that laboratory now, but we probably won't need that sort of courier service if we have something happen again. So now I want to turn your attention to the spreadsheet that you have, and let's see. I'll hold up a copy of it so that you know what I'm talking about. So it should look like this with the Board of Animal Health logo there. And what I wanted to point out is there were three sources of funding for the Board of Animal Health. Does everybody have it? Could I wait?
There we go. Okay.
You have it?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So there were three sources of funding for the Board of Animal Health. There was a federal cooperative agreement, and that was for $862,000. I don't know where that $1, why that $1 was thrown in there, but $862,000. We spent approximately $511,000 of that and have $351,000 left. That cooperative agreement has been, we requested from the USDA that they extend that cooperative agreement. It would have expired this spring, and they have extended it till next spring. So that money will be available for another year in case we see this disease again. The second one is funding, the $379,000 is funding from the general fund that was done in the regular session last year. Mm-hmm. So that was money that we got fairly early on, $379,000. We spent $341,000 of that, and there remains about $37,000. If you remember, we had a special session, and during that time, the board was appropriated $1.853 million for avian influenza. The disease had heated up by that point. Of that, we've only expended $296,000. of it, and there's about $1.5 million left. Now, when I say that that is left, some of that has already been set aside for certain things that we're still doing, but about $1 million of it is still left at this point. And then I'd point out, too, at the very bottom, you can see that about $745,000 out of the board's general fund money that wasn't appropriated for HIPATH AI was spent before we got these funds. So there was some portion of our budget that was spent on it as well. And with that, I would talk about the University of Minnesota got a little over $8.5 million to renovate the Minnesota Poultry Testing Laboratory in Willmar. And what you're looking at right now is a picture of what the lab looked like about 2 months ago. And then if we go to the next slide, the groundbreaking for this facility was December 21st, and you probably recognize some of those people in the pictures. The lab was 20 years old. It had 3,665 square feet, and the expansion now will provide for an additional 8,235 square feet. So it's going to be about three times the size of the that it was. And if you remember, the reason this money was appropriated is because we couldn't do PCR testing for avian influenza at that laboratory at the time, and we could only do it in St. Paul. And so there was a delay in getting those samples to St. Paul, and that's critical with the HIPATH AI because the owner only gets indemnity on the birds that are alive. They don't get indemnity on the birds that are dead, and so time was of the essence in getting samples there. If you go to the final slide, this is what the laboratory will look like when it's finished. I've seen pictures of what it looks like right now, and it's heavily under construction, and they expect to have the building completed by August of this year, which is incredible. They're moving it along as fast as they can. And Mr. Chair and members, that's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Doctor. We do have a few questions. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Hartman, I'd like to add also congratulations, great career. Since I've been here, you're one of the most well-respected professional people we've worked with, so thank you for your work. My question has to do with the status at the Willmar Lab today. Long hours put in there as well, not a lot of work to move to a new location off-site, I believe. What's their status today in terms of if something were to happen? Are they able to do more work there today like they were last year, or are they pretty well handicapped by this move to a new location?
Dr. Harbin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the lab, to renovate the lab, they had to move out of there.
Yeah.
And they found a building not very far away from it that we've leased, and we had to have all the equipment moved over there and set up. I think there was about a week of downtime, and then they were up and running again. They are not doing the PCR tests there, though, right now. They're doing the tests they've always done traditionally. When the building is finished, we will be hiring three PCR technicians and a diagnostician to start in that facility, and then they would be able to do the PCR testing.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Well, thinking back to last year, I think it was March 3rd, the first outbreak. You ready if it happens again? What things have you learned to make it go more smoothly? And what's the status of your folks now and your thoughts of if it's going to strike again? Can anybody know or tell? And the question back then was, what caused the spread? Any additional research done in that area?
Dr. Harbin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I knew you were going to ask that question, or somebody was going to ask that question, so I brought along a list of things that we've done in preparation, and Mike Starkey later is going to talk about that as well, how we're prepared for it. We made it through the fall without seeing any. I'm still knocking on wood. We're into the season that's probably the most dangerous right now, though. So what we did learn about the virus is they characterized the virus at the National Veterinary Services Laboratory, and they said there were about 40 of the viruses that were different from each other. Not very different, but a little bit. And so they think those were 40 introductions from the environment into these farms. The other the other farms beyond those 40 were, the virus was very similar and it was in clusters. So the feeling is that those were spread from farm to farm as opposed to introductions from the environment. So there were 70-some that were spread that way. We don't know exactly how it was spread. We do know that it could be spread by people. It could be spread by machinery. It could be spread by the wind. I think they showed some evidence that that's a possibility as well. And I went off a little bit on that. Did I answer all your questions?
Yeah. Follow-up? Chair Anderson? No. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hartman. A couple of questions. Can you, if memory serves me correctly, I think that I saw something in the news recently that there's been another outbreak in Indiana. So I guess what I'm asking now is kind of an overall status report of where this virus is in the United States at this time.
Dr. Hart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, yes, there was a recent outbreak of a different virus. Mm-hmm. It's not a Eurasian strain. It's an American or North American strain. It's an H7N8 virus that they found there. It's an interesting case because it illustrates why Minnesota has had an avian influenza program for the last 50 years, and that is if you let low pathogenic avian influenza circulate on a farm, it can morph into highly pathogenic avian influenza, and that's what they believe happened there. They found 10 farms total. Of those 10 farms, only one was highly pathogenic. The others, it was the same virus, but it hadn't mutated into a highly pathogenic form. Regardless of that, they depopulated all the farms. And that is done. They are still, you know, like we were afterward, going through the testing and then monitoring the compost piles and all of that. They're still doing that, but the virus is gone, and there is no high-path AI in the United States at this point.
Mr. Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You talked about depopulation. There's been some changes. One of the problems that I remember from last year is the foaming machines and so forth. Can you give us just a real brief summary on what maybe some changes are to what's acceptable for using for depopulation?
Dr. Hart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, yes, and that was an issue in Indiana, because it was very cold there when they were depopulating these flocks. And so in some cases, and they also mentioned that it took a while for USDA to get the foaming equipment to them. So there was a situation where they used ventilation shutdown. It is accepted by USDA as long as it is the last alternative. And essentially what that is just shutting off the fans and closing the building up and then turning the heat up, and then the birds die within a short period of time.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Biosecurity is a huge issue, and you know, I've talked to the turkey growers in my area and around the state with the directors and stuff. Can you just kind of walk us through some of the steps? I think it's important for us as members and people here today to understand really the steps that a lot of these producers are taking to enhance their biosecurity.
Dr. Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, that's a good point. It was, I felt, the most important thing we could do is to improve our biosecurity so that if the virus did come back, that we weren't moving it into the barn. So we contracted with the Minnesota Turkey Growers Association, who work with some poultry veterinarians to do biosecurity reviews on all of the farms that were affected last year. and some of the changes that people have made. Number one, they are using the Danish entry system, so that when you go into a barn, there's a clean line, dirty line. You take, make sure that you're changing your coveralls as you move over to the clean side. You're putting on new boots. You're doing everything to keep the virus from coming in. They're also, I understand, in a lot of places they're pouring cement on the entry to the barn, so that when they're moving equipment in and out, that it can be cleaned and disinfected easier at that phase. A lot of people were using crews to do certain things like vaccinate birds, and they'd have that crew at this farm today, at this farm tomorrow, and so they're all reevaluating how they use those crews, and similarly how they share equipment. So it's, I think that they've done a lot of work. Is it perfect? No, but it's a way better than it was prior to these reviews.
You represent Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just finally, to summarize my comments, I know that this has been a very, very large task for a lot of producers to get themselves up to kind of current standards with regards to biosecurity. They've made significant investments in their operations, and I just appreciate the work that's gone on through the Board of Animal Health and other state agencies to really help them out with some of this stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Hartman, wanted to kind of follow up a little more on the vector issue. And I think I saw in a USDA report about tilled fields or soil-borne movement versus, and I'd heard anecdotally that barns where there was alfalfa or grass around them versus those that had open fields, the ones that had vegetation nearby did not have the infection versus those that had more open soil having the infection. Can you maybe clarify or at least elaborate on this?
Dr. Hart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, yes, you're right. They did an epidemiologic study, and one of the risk factors for the farms that did get infected was that they had open fields and that they were tilling them at the time, and there were high winds. So the thinking is, there's no way of proving this for sure, but they're saying that it was in the soil there, and because it was windy and they were tilling, the virus got into the farms. So yes, that was a risk factor.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Hartman, following up a little more on, and maybe you covered this, but when this started and when there have been discussions in other states, there was a look at wild ducks, wild geese, wildlife in terms of this. And could you maybe talk about the response that the DNR did out looking for it or chasing wildlife, and what the detects were in terms of the wild population?
Dr. Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, yes, I think the DNR tested about 6,000 samples. It could be more than that, somewhere in that range. And they were from various sources. Sometimes they were from dead birds, sometimes they were from hunter kill, and sometimes it was just feces from the birds that they collected from the environment. And they were not able to detect the virus in any of the wild waterfowl that they tested. The only two detections we had were in a Cooper's hawk and a chickadee that was in the suburbs of the Twin Cities. So very strange findings. There's a lot of discussion about that. I've talked to the experts, and they're a little confused why we're not finding it in the wildlife. Traditionally, this virus, or avian influenza viruses, have always been carried by wild waterfowl. So we're not sure exactly why that is the case.
Representative Hansen?
And then finally, Mr. Chair and Dr. Hartman, I know we've been talking with our surrounding states, and could you maybe just contrast a little bit about our response versus Iowa's and kind of the challenges that our experience and what other states are learning from us as this happens?
Dr. Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, Well, as I mentioned, that we thought we had about 40 introductions from the environment and then 110 total farms that were affected. They did that same study in Iowa, and there were only two detections in Iowa, and the rest apparently was spread. Now, they had a totally different, not totally, but a very different situation than we did in Minnesota, in that they were dealing mostly with laying hens and big farms. I think the biggest was about 5 million hens. And it was interesting. I was talking to the state veterinarian from Iowa, and he said that compost pile from that farm was 6 miles long. So it was that's a lot of birds to deal with, and it took a long time. As far as the surrounding states, South Dakota had about 12, I think, affected farms. But if you look at the number of turkey farms in South Dakota versus Minnesota, they had about the same percentage infection as we did. So I think it was, since this has never happened in the United States before, nobody was as prepared as they wished they had been. I think we are now. Somebody asked earlier, do you think it's coming back? I've asked all the experts. They don't know if it's coming back, but we're assuming it's coming back and preparing in that manner.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. All right. Representative Fabian, did you have a follow-up?
Just a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Hartman, you and I had a little conversation about some of the testing that was done. There had been some concern expressed to me by some of the producers. You talked about feces and so forth. There's different types of tests, as I understand. There's a serology test, there's a swab test, there's a feces test. Is there evidence that suggests that one of them is more thorough than another, and should we be doing something different?
Dr. Hart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, there is some concern from the turkey growers and from the University of Minnesota that DNR isn't doing what they think they should be doing. I've tried to stay out of that battle for the most part, but I've been involved in it. Yes, there's two different ways that you can test a bird for avian influenza. One would be serology, and that's where you're getting a blood sample from the animal, and then you're doing a serologic test to see if there are antibodies against the virus in the bloodstream. And that will tell you if the bird was exposed to the virus at some point earlier. If you, the other test that we do is the PCR test. That's a polymerase chain reaction test looking for DNA. And that test will tell you if the animal or if the bird is currently affected by the virus. So that's the difference in the test. We also can do virus isolation where they actually grow the virus and can recognize it that way. So there are a number of different ways of testing for it. I don't know. I've tried to pin down the experts at the University of Minnesota about specifically what their concern is that we're not doing enough with wildlife, and I haven't been able to pin it down to a specific thing. But they are talking.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Hartman, you sent me a link that had a bunch of data regarding positive tests for birds around the United States. And if memory serves me correctly, again, and you mentioned it, there was two birds, I believe. There was a number of waterfowl around the nation that tested positive. My question is were we using the same test as those other states where these waterfowl were reported as positive? Did they use a different test to determine that than what we were using here in Minnesota that showed that waterfowl was not infected?
Dr. Hart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, I believe they're using the same tests. In the case of the waterfowl that I know of that were found in the wild, there were kind of strange circumstances. In one case, it was in a falconry. So the falcon died, and that's why they tested, and they were feeding them ducks. Or they were preying on the ducks, and so they started testing the ducks, and the ducks were positive. So they had a more pinpoint way of looking for it than we did. And I can't speak to all the other parts of the United States, how they were detected, but nobody has detected a lot of it in the wild for some reason. But I the university and the DNR are talking, and if there is more testing that needs to be done, we should continue that conversation.
Okay. We'll spend about 10 more minutes max on this, all right? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, I think that I would like to have a conversation with you about having DNR and the University of Minnesota come in here and explain to us what track maybe we should take. Thank you,
Duly noted. Thank you. Dr. Hartman, going back to the expenditures and the remaining amount, are we sitting okay as far as the dollars are concerned for any, if there, in the event there is a new outbreak? Or is it fine? Are we going to be needing additional dollars? Building off of the whole emergent disease piece, we spend a lot of time talking about avian influenza, as we should. One of the biggest threats to not only animal agriculture but plants as well as emerging diseases. And I want to make sure that we as a state are doing everything that we can to prepare for that. We've been in conversations in the interim with the University of Minnesota and others, and we would like to invest, whether it's in the VDL and some of these other things, to make sure that we are fully prepared for any emerging diseases. So with that said, I'm looking for some money as well. On these dollar amounts, going back to that, is it adequate to help you? Is there any room here to where we could take funds and invest in other items as it pertains to emerging diseases? Just any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, you ask a difficult question, because if we don't have TB in cattle, if we don't have influenza in turkeys, then we don't need any of it. If we do, it depends on how bad it is. If it's 10 farms that are affected, we have adequate funding. If it's 100, we don't.
Right.
The good news with this outbreak we had in the spring is that the federal government invested most of the money in Minnesota. They spent way more money in Minnesota than we did. And they would be back if we had this disease. It's a disease that's considered a foreign animal disease and affects, as I mentioned before, international trade. So it's very important to them, too. So we would surely be looking to them for funding. But I really can't answer that question specifically. Are we doing everything we can to prepare? I think we have done a lot. Is there more that could be done? One of the questions we've had is one of the methods of euthanasia is CO2 gas, and it's been tried in both layers and turkeys, and it works very effectively. The problem is not the delivery system for getting the CO2 into the building, but the actual CO2 itself. It's apparently a commodity that is contracted for, and so you may or may not be able to get it in the case of an emergency. And the companies don't want to be seen on a infected turkey farm and then on the next day at a restaurant or some other business that they service. So they would have to bring somebody in from another state to do it. So that's not fast enough. We've been looking into, could we purchase some CO2 tanks or trailers and have them in storage and be ready? So we're looking into that. That could cost a fair amount of money. But we continue to talk to the poultry industry about what more we need to do.
Well, thank you for that. And we want to make sure that we're fully prepared. And I know that as a state, I mean, we pull together as a state, and rightfully so, directed monies towards the avian influenza. And I'm just, my question is, if it was additional dollars above and beyond what was needed, if we could potentially redirect those dollars to invest in other areas as it pertains to emerging diseases. So that's why I asked the question. So, but we'll be in conversations with you throughout the legislative session as well. So any other questions for Dr. Hartman? Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is short, but living on the Canadian border, I hear on the radio some testing that's going on in the province of Ontario, Manitoba. Are you sharing data with the Canadian government, or are they sharing with you to see if similar trends are going on?
Dr. Hart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund, yes, the United States government does that, not the Board of Animal Health or in Minnesota, but the federal government shares data with Canada and Mexico.
Representative Eklund, follow-up? Okay. Seeing no more questions, once again, thank you so much for your service, everything that you've done for the state of Minnesota, and enjoy your retirement.
Thank you, Mr. Right. Chairman and members. It's been a rare treat for me, and I appreciate having worked with you, and maybe we'll see you a bit more of this session yet.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Hartman. Ms. Place.
Mr. Chair and members, I would now like to bring Commissioner Dave Fredrickson up. He's going to give a brief overview of our agency.
Wonderful. Thank you. Commissioner, welcome. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for a bad cold here today, but we'll plow ahead.
All right.
I'm Dave Fredrickson. I serve as Commissioner of Agriculture and have for the past 5 years. And if my health hangs in, I'll stick around for another 3 years. It's in question, though, right now, I'll tell you. My job today really is to sort of open up a discussion, and then we have brought pretty much the entire Department of Agriculture over here to answer any questions that you might have. They are in the wings, waiting with bated breath to come forward and visit with you all.
Well, for the mayor, if you do a good job, we won't have to ask them any questions.
Excuse me. You know, for the benefit of particularly the new member, Representative Eklund, and for all of you that have forgotten what we might have what we do at the Department of Agriculture, I just want to give a really high-level, quick summary of the department. Our mission at the department is threefold. It is to enhance Minnesotans' quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply, the health of our environment, and the strength of our ag economy. We have four regulatory agencies and one non-regulatory division that are primarily responsible for carrying out the agency's threefold mission. The first, and these are not by order of importance, they're just by order. The first is the Dairy and Meat Inspection Division and the Food and Feed Safety Division. They enforce state laws and regulations related to the production, the processing, and the sale of milk and other dairy products, processed foods, meats, beverages, eggs, poultry products, and animal feed. The Food and Feed Division, Safety Division, is responsible for inspecting the state's grocery stores, convenience stores, food processing facilities, feed mills, and pet food manufacturers. A simple way of explaining our responsibility in terms of food safety is simply we inspect pretty much everything that is not served on the plate, and the Board of Health, I'm sorry, the Department of Health inspects everything that's served on the plate. A quick and dirty summary. I take that back. It's not a dirty summary. It's a quick and clean summary. Let me just quickly move to the three other divisions. We have the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division, which regulates pesticides and fertilizers. Activities include the oversight of the ag chemical site remediation, voluntary cleanups, waste pesticide collection, licensing of applicators, permitting of ag chemical facilities, inspection of pesticide, fertilizer, and lime facilities. Additionally, the division personnel responds to emergencies, conducts pesticide misuse investigations, and monitor surface and groundwater for ag chemicals. The third division is the plant protection division. The plant protection division protects Minnesota's crops and native plant species through regulatory programs and support services. The division certifies, inspects, and regulates the nursery industry to protect against invasive and exotic pests. The division inspects and certifies the seed industry and the seed potato industry. The division surveys for agricultural and forest pests and diseases and has overall responsibility for reducing or eliminating exotic and invasive plant pests. Thanks to you, the committee, and particularly Representative Franzen, we now have some new responsibilities, and that is in the area of industrial hemp. So we look forward to working with the committee as we move forward with that important alternative crop across Minnesota. Farmers are looking for an opportunity to raise something different, and thanks to your great work, you're soon to be able. We'll soon be able to provide that opportunity. The other division that we work very closely with is the Ag Marketing and Development Division, which focuses on marketing and promotion of local foods, organic, livestock, and renewable fuels, as well as the development of domestic and international market opportunities for ag products. I want to also extend my thanks to the committees for your effort as it relates to Cuba trade. The committee with Representative Constantine led the way in providing resources for the department to do an excursion to Havana this past December. I was privileged to be able to lead a smaller delegation of folks to Havana, and our job basically was, I don't know, many of you remember the TV show Laugh-In with Artie Johnson, who had the helmet on his head and would part the weeds and look out and say, very interesting. That was our role, to basically part the weeds, look around to see what was happening in Cuba, and to see if there was an opportunity to enhance trade with the Cuban government in this case. Of course, we were not able to consummate a deal for anything while we're there, and that is basically because of the Cuban embargo. I'm pleased to see Congressman Emmer and Senator Klobuchar taking a very serious leadership role in the United States Congress to look at lifting that embargo so that we can hopefully open the trade doors. Now, we're not looking at a huge market. We're looking at a country that is twice the size of Minnesota, about 11.5 million people. And you certainly, you know, if you're shopping for apples, you go where the apples are grown. And if we're shopping for customers, we look to our neighbors to Mexico, and we look to our neighbors in Canada. There are more people that live in and around Mexico City than live in the entire island of Cuba. But nonetheless, it is a very important market for products that we grow, that we raise, and we process in, here in Minnesota. So we look, we spent about 50% of the money, and we're looking to do another trade trip to Cuba, possibly either a reverse trade mission for folks to come up here, or otherwise an opportunity for us to go down and make acquaintances again with friends. I find that anytime we deal with international agriculture, it's always best to travel, to look folks in the eye, to talk to them. You develop the best relationship by doing that on a very personal basis, and so I look forward to hopefully another trade trip there. In addition to those four divisions and the work that we do at that level, we also have our laboratory services, which I am extremely proud of the work that we do there. Of course, we will have some requests as we move into this legislative session to upgrade some of the equipment that we have. We understand how high-priced farm machinery has gotten. You ain't seen nothing yet when you compare farm machinery to the high-tech equipment that is required by our trade partners and others that we're required to have in our laboratory in order to keep us at the level that we're at and continue to grow. So I look forward to further discussion with that. I also can't walk away from the table today without again acknowledging Dr. Bill, Representative Keel's second cousin, Hartman. He will always be known as that to me from here on out, Representative Keel, and the close working relationship Bill and I have had over the past 5 years. I respect his work and his opinion. We follow Dr. Hartman. We have a memo of understanding at the Department of Ag, and we are there to back up the department, or to back up the Board of Animal Health whenever and however they ask us to do that. We have operated under that MOU for many years. I continue to sign it every year. He comes to my office, throws a headlock on me, and forces me into it. I still think I can take him. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I'm a little older than he is. So,
is there legal about that?
You're retiring, and I'm still working. What's wrong with that picture here? But again, Bill, for the record, thank you for the great 5 years that I've had working with you, and best of luck to you in your retirement. I cannot say enough about the support that the committee and the legislature and the chairs gave to the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Agriculture as we move through this time of high path avian influenza. Mike Starkey is here. Jim Borboom is going to follow me and talk very specifically about the resources that you allocated to the department. And so with that, I'm going to stop, and hopefully I would ask that maybe you go directly to Jim, and then maybe we can have some questions, or again, it's your call, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We do have a few questions. I think the members, can we wait?
After? No, that's fine. You know,
everybody's okay, I think. Okay. So please, we'll follow all your... Ms. Place, what would you like to do?
I would like to bring up Deputy Commissioner Jim Borboom.
Perfect. Thank you. We have someone who can make a decision. I'm just kidding. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jim Borboom, Deputy Commissioner with the agency, and I'm pleased to be here and happy to give you just a progress report on the financial resources that you've given the agency. And the handle that I'll be working from is High Path Avian Influenza Summary of Funds dated March 1, so it has our logo on the top. The information on this sheet really reflects the spending that the agency has done, both on federal funds and state funds, and the balance of funds that we have remaining. At the top of the report, you can see that we have several sources of funds, beginning with a USDA cooperative agreement in the amount of $1.165 million, and then two general fund appropriations, one during the regular session in the amount of $514,000, and then a special session appropriation in the amount of $3.5 million. We were able to utilize some funds from the Department of Homeland Security, which is in the next listing there. And then finally, at the bottom of that source of funds is a $10 million that was given, appropriated to the Rural Finance Authority for loan programs under the Disaster Assistance Loan Program. And these are zero-interest loan programs to producers. If you continue on the bottom part of the page, then you start to see the use of the spending authority under the cooperative agreement, the monies that have been spent both in fiscal years 15 and 16. So out of that $1.165 million on the very bottom there, there's $445,000 remaining in that account. If you turn the page over, then you can see the two general fund appropriations. The regular session appropriation is in the green. Out of that $514,000, we've got a balance of $26,591. You can see again in fiscal years 15 and 16, the spending is primarily overtime costs, meals, mileage, and lodging, and some of the non-payroll costs are primarily equipment, and I've got a separate sheet that give you more information on that. continuing on then during the special session, which is in the orange color, that was a major appropriation of $3.5 million. We only spent $165,000 out of that on some equipment, so the balance remaining is at $3.377 million. We fully utilized the spending or the money from Homeland Security Emergency Management. And then on the very bottom of the page, this disaster account, that is a contingency fund that is controlled by Minnesota Management and Budget and essentially is available for other disasters, including high bath avian influenza. With that, I'd stop. Otherwise, I'd move on to the listing of the equipment.
I think we're going to go to questions here quick, okay? We'll go to Representative Lewick first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is the right time. This is a little bit different subject, not specifically an avian flu issue, but as you're well aware, over the years, the wolves have managed to kill cattle faster than we can pay for them. So I'd like to get a update on where we're at on funds for the last fiscal year and looking forward on both wolf depredation and obviously that's also directly related to the elk situation because it's like between the elk and the wolves, they try to clean the fund out first. And so anyway, if you've got an update, if it's appropriate time for that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Place.
Yeah. Assistant Commissioner Andrea Vobel will be speaking to that right after we go through HPAI.
Okay.
So do you want to hold it?
All right, we'll hold on that one. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is actually for the Commissioner Fredrickson. In relation to, or on the subject of relations with Cuba, I was given from a couple different sources, as you know, in my district, which, by the way, Commissioner Fredrickson is hailed from originally from Murdoch, the great city of Murdoch in my district, so always good to see him. But I was told from a couple different sources that as we open relations with Cuba, there's potential for it greatly affecting our sugar beet industry in Minnesota on the sugar trade. Is there, in a very adverse way, by the way, is there any truth to this? Is it being addressed? Can you just give a little bit of information that you know?
Well, obviously, Mr. Chairman and Representative Miller, obviously there are about three things that Cuba is known for producing. One of them, of course, is sugar cane. The other is cigars. And the other is Havana Club rum. obviously, there is concern about that. There's no two ways about that. It is, I think, in the best interests of the United States and in the best interests of Minnesota to make sure that there is an allocation as we move through the opening of Cuba trade so that we don't just crack the door wide open for the influx of Cuban sugar. And so I think it's a little premature at this point in time. However, that issue will be front and center as we move to open up trade with Cuba. I can't give you an answer as to how far along the negotiations are. I doubt very far along at this point in time.
Representative Miller?
You're right.
That's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. I think what we'll do is, because a lot of these questions may pertain to other things other than, we have one more sheet to go through, is that correct? Let's walk through that quick, and we'll come back to questions.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, again, thank you. The last sheet, then, is just a listing of the equipment that we've acquired, or the agency, I should say, has acquired through the generous appropriation, both the general fund monies as well as some of the federal funds. The total investment is $290,000. When we began the response to high path avian influenza a year ago, the agency owned one foaming unit. Today we own six foaming units. We've acquired a unit from a private party located in the state of Georgia. We have built and assembled four foaming units with a team and some expertise from folks from the state of North Carolina. In addition to that, I'm happy to report that we've acquired a mobile lab. That piece of equipment is owned by the National Guard, and there is capacity to deploy that resource to a site and obviously get a very prompt turnaround in the testing. And I'm happy also to say that the National Guard has passed the test in order to do this type of work. So I think, again, we're in a very good position given the experience and the resources that we have this year.
Thank you. Same question to you as I asked Dr. Hartman. We allocated a lot of money towards this, as we should, we as a state, as we should, and see some additional fund balances here. And focusing on emerging diseases and the need to reinvest in some equipment in other places, whether it's at the University of Minnesota, the VDL, wherever. Is there any room to allocate or redirect these funds, or is it too early, or what's your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts would be the same response that we heard from Dr. Hartman. You know, if there's no event, obviously, then these resources could easily be redirected. You know, I would certainly want to continue to have the first claim for these resources for another response, both this spring and next fall, and even into next spring. So, you know, if there is a conversation around redirecting some of those resources, my desire would make sure that the first claim to this goes toward high path, even influenza.
Thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. We do have some questions. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the testimony. My question is for Commissioner Fredrickson.
Okay.
I don't want to make you talk too much when you get a cold.
No.
And these are just some issues that came up in my district this last year or so. And two of them in particular I'd just like to get your quick opinion on. First, the first one is the, I have a recycling facility in my district. It's located in Hutchinson that takes these large plastic holders of like silage and things like that. And they would take more of them. They claim they're the only one in the whole state that does that. And I attended a meeting where the MPCA was at. I don't know, were you there also? Why didn't I recognize? No, I was just kidding.
Mr. Chairman, I cut a pretty low profile.
But so you are looking at this issue. They need some equipment and to expand, and they have the room to expand. Mm-hmm. So very briefly, and I think the reason I throw this out, I think it's an issue probably in most rural districts with these plastic casings. They wind up in the landfill or burnt. And so if you'd comment just briefly on that, and I have one additional question, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen, yes, I was there, and I did have a chance to tour the facility. After the meeting, I was completely blown away by the business of recycling, having never been in a recycling center like that. It was just incredible. The work that they do and the equipment that they have, and also the fact that that community wants to be the center of the universe as it relates to ag plastics. And so I think anything that we can do to assist them in becoming that, I don't think you need to have ag waste recycling in every county across Minnesota. I think the best way to approach that would be from a regional perspective. What they're talking about is containers randomly located across the county. So that you know that cycling or the plastics can be collected and then hopefully recycled. So I suspect, like anything else, the response to that situation is resources to get them up and running and be able to provide that service to agriculture. So I appreciate the fact that you were there and listened to their pitch also. So anything we can do from a department perspective, you can certainly count on our support.
All right. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you for that response, Commissioner Fredrickson. So are you looking at coming up with some type of joint proposal with the MPCA or anything at this time?
At this point in time, no.
Okay. Mr. Chair, my second question.
Representative Grunhagen.
Okay, this one has to deal with animals. And I have a customer who has raises hogs on three different farms. Him and his two sons, they do farrow to finish. And they had an inspector come out to their farm this fall from Kansas City. And now, and he's been raising hogs for over 30 years, okay? So he pretty, and very very good farmer. Again, he's been a customer of mine almost 30 years. So now after the inspector came out, he is told that when you pick up a little pig, that you can no longer pick it up by the hind leg. You have to pick it up by the tummy, okay? So, and then the second thing he was told is, and again, I talked to him several times to make sure I got this straight, by the way. Second thing he was told, he has to go out to the pig barn twice a day and log into a written log that he actually went out to the barn. And if he shoots a sick pig, he has to log in that he cleaned his gun, okay? And the other thing the pork board told him is that very soon he's going to have to buy cameras to put into his hog barns, and that they're going to be monitoring him, what he does in the hog barn. One last thing. The last time I talked to him, he was just on his way to be certified every 3 years on how to load a hog onto the truck. And part of that is you cannot raise your paddle on the pig above your shoulder. You have to keep it below your shoulder, okay? And I shared this, by the way, at Crow River Winery with a dairy organization, and the dairy farmers afterwards told me we're getting the same type of regulations on what we can do with cattle. Now, my point, you know, I finally said to him, I said, you know, Richard, I said, you know what they really want, don't you? He said, what? I said, they want the pigs in the house and you in the barn, and then they want the pigs to check on you twice a day, okay? I mean, it's just getting ridiculous, all right? I grew up in a farm. I dealt with pigs, loaded them on trucks. You got to go be certified? Commissioner, where is this coming from, okay?
Mr. Fredrickson, would you like to comment on it? Otherwise, I will.
Mr. Chairman, I am flummoxed. I don't know. I have no idea. Let me say this. It is not, I repeat, it is not coming from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
No. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Fredrickson. I appreciate finding out. Now, my understanding in talking with him, the pork boards are telling him to do this to stay ahead of the regulations that are going to come out state and federal. That was his understanding. So I'm not sure, but in all seriousness, I did not exaggerate anything that he said, nor did I exaggerate what the dairy farmers said. And to the point where he's going to get out of the business if this doesn't stop.
Well, Representative Grunhagen, I think some of that is producer-driven, and it's best management practices or best animal handling practices. And a lot of this has taken place so that there isn't legislation mandating how you should operate every step of the way. And so, again, a lot of this is producer-driven. And on the pork side, you have PQA Plus, which is pork quality assurance. And so you do go through and you're certified on properly handling animals, loading animals, transporting animals, properly handling any type of any medication or vaccines that are on your farm. And I think that's I personally think that's a good idea, just to make sure you have those standards set in place. And you know, and as far as your example about handling a pig, I know firsthand when you're reaching for a baby pig and you grab the hind leg, that you can injure the joints, and then you can get some swollen or some strep in the joints. So it does make sense to grab from the belly. It's just, it makes good economic sense as far as management sense. So this isn't always driven by the government. Sometimes it's driven by the producers themselves. So in this particular case, Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, I just find it odd that somebody who's been raising hogs for 30 years and doesn't want to injure his profit, okay? And I was raised on a farm where we raised hogs, and I can always remember picking up little pigs by the hind end, mm-hmm. or by the leg, yeah. But I don't know, when you pick them up by the tummy, it'd be hard to castrate them at that point somehow, I think. You've got to hold it. But anyway.
Well, we can talk about it. But, you know, the other thing, and we've said this a number of times, in agriculture, we've done a great job providing the consumer with a safe, wholesome, great-tasting product at an affordable price. We've done a terrible job educating the consumer on who we are, what we do, and why. And that's why you end up having a lot of this. And whether you listen to Temple Grandin or others talking about glass walls, that's what we need to do in agriculture. Representative Lewick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to go back to that question on depredation and the funding and all that whole business. That's okay. Just want to make sure that doesn't slip away.
So, you know the question. Please state your name for the record and begin, please.
Yes, my name is Andrea Bobble. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. Welcome.
And I actually prepared a statement, so I think I'll read that. I think that might help answer some questions, then I'd be happy to answer any additional ones after that.
Excellent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as I said, my name is Andrea Bobble, and I'm the newly appointed Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I oversee the Wolf and Elk Depredation Compensation Program at MDA, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to provide some progress on this important program. I want to first acknowledge and thank a number of people who have been essential to the program's continuation and success, the first being Representative Dale Lewick, whom I had the pleasure of first meeting at the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association annual meeting, and who has provided some vital background and feedback for me personally and the department on this program. As well as Representative Dan Fabian, who's been incredibly helpful, ensuring we're able to backfill farmers' claims and following up on its progress. They have both been crucial in our communications with producers on this program and how it works. I also want to thank Chairs Hamilton and Anderson for their continued support of this program, as well as Tom Peterson of Minnesota Farmers Union, who has worked tirelessly on behalf of this program. So, as you know, MDA's Animal Damage Compensation Program was established in 1977 and provides 100% compensation with a minimum claim amount of $100 and a maximum claim amount of $20,000 per producer per year. We are funded through a biannual appropriation and work with multiple agencies to ensure that it works smoothly. As far as the numbers go, as of the end of December 2015, MDA has paid out $184,561 for 88 wolf damage claims and $47,612 for 14 elk damage claims since July 1st of last year. These numbers include a significant amount of claims that were carried into this biennium because there was no funding left in the last biennial budget, as I'm sure you're well aware. Thanks to you, we were able to ensure that farmers were made whole again. As of the end of December, we had a balance of $417,827 remaining in that account to pay verified claims through the end of fiscal year 17. Given recent historical trends, we're confident that this will be adequate to pay claims received through the end of the current biennium. In addition, MDA submits applications each year for funding from the Wolf Livestock Demonstration Project grants through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which requires a full match from the requesting state. Our current award provides funds through September 30th of 2017. Again, we feel we're in a strong position and will have enough funds to continue to compensate farmers for any livestock and crop damage claims through the end of the biennium. However, we will continue to monitor wolf and elk activity through our strong relationship with DNR and keep you apprised of any potential budget shortfalls. And with that, I welcome any questions.
Thank you. We're going to spend about five more minutes on this. Representative Lewick, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you. You answered all the questions and appreciate what you do in that area. Thank you very much.
Jerry Anderson. All right. Representative Franson.
Oh, I just wanted to mention, Commissioner Fredrickson, about Cuba, that when you do go back to Cuba, you know, I visited Cuba myself this summer, although I was unable to see any cane sugar fields. I did visit the tobacco factory, and it was very eye-opening, more like a sweatshop is what it was. Talking thousands of workers all day long just rolling tobacco leaves, getting into their, but also that I want to see the Cuban people themselves prosper from the bottom up and not top down. And I mentioned that numerous times in my visits with the elected officials and different people that we met in Cuba, because after our tour I went and actually spoke to Cubans and who make $20 a month no matter what they do, and a lot of them are leaving their professions of high skills like engineers, doctors, and they're going to work in the hospitality industry because they can make more money waiting tables or working at the resorts because they get tip money. Spoke to a cab driver who used to be a forensic doctor and is driving cab now because he can make more money driving cab. So, I mean, this is the realities of living under communism, and many of the Cubans that I spoke to absolutely love the United States, and would show us photographs of the family members that they have over here. And when I would ask them, what is it about America that you love so much, it was of the opportunity that America provides, because Cuba does not provide opportunity for their individuals. So something to think about as you go forth representing Minnesota in a potential trade agreement.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. Short answer there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Franzen, I'm old enough to remember 1959, clearly. I'm also old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. I was a recruit in Fort Leonard Wood in October of 1962. And you know what happened in October of 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred, and the base and every base in the United States was put on the highest alert that this country has ever been on. So I get it all from a very visceral point of view. I thought we were going to war in October of 1962. And so I get it. I get their approach, and I abhor the approach they have in their form of government, and I'm only hopeful that that will change as we move forward. They're opening up some. It'll probably take years. They're looking for tourism. They lack hard currency in the country, and the only way for them to get hard currency will be through opening tourism. But before they do that, they're going to have to do something with their hotels. We stayed in a, quote, four-star hotel. I'm sure you did also. It was four-star from about three blocks. From about two blocks, it was starting to go down, three-star. When we got in and rode the elevator that didn't stop at the floor but stopped a foot below or a foot above, I think I would give it a one-star. And so they're going to have to, they have some work to do before they can access that $6 billion of annual tourism dollars.
Thank you, Commissioner.
So I get, thank you for your comments, though.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of love how this committee is feeling the burn. Talking about worker protection, talking about trade impacts.
Talking about everything but agriculture.
Trade protection impacts, public financing of private industry. Amazing times in 2016.
Feel the burn. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers and the department in general. I'm just wondering about the millions of dollars that we've spent on wolf depredation over the years, and it looks like we're going to continue to subsidize the meals for the timberwolves in Minnesota. I'm just wondering if the department has ever considered taking a different position and maybe pursue the delisting of those wolves on the, from the federal protection.
We'd like to take that, Commissioner.
Well, you know, we have not taken a leadership role. We basically respond to what the legislature puts on the table for us at this point in time. We're managing the elk and wolf depredation fund. We've also been asked to work hard to secure any kind of federal support. We have done that to the tune of about $120,000 this past year, but in terms of the delisting, we have not.
Thank you, Sundin. And we're going to take one last question from Representative Bly, and then Whitney, your next testifiers will have until noon, wrap it up at noon, so prepare them. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. Over the interim, Commissioner, I had a brief conversation with you about your interest in food deserts across greater Minnesota, and I recently read an article at the University of Minnesota put out about a grocery store in Milan that was doing quite well. But I'm curious to hear from you about some of your plans about how you might improve the situation for many of rural communities that don't have access to good food.
Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, Representative Bly, I read the article also about Milan. It's a neighboring community to my home community. The town of Atwater has recently lost their grocery store. My home community of Murdoch has lost their grocery store. Kirkoven lost their grocery store, and but for the willingness of one entrepreneurial spirit, they would be without. But they came back with a grocery hardware store combination. You know, the stark reality is in many cases there's not enough people to support a grocery store. In my home community of Murdoch, there's 280 people. And it is just very difficult. And so the answer to those problems, obviously, is resources to aid and assist communities to establish some kind of a store. We had a restaurant in my home community, and it was supported by local communities or by local citizens. It was community owned. We all own shares in the restaurant. Those shares would never pay a dividend. In fact, they closed the restaurant eventually, and so the shares just went. I don't know what happens to dead shares. Do they go to share heaven or someplace? But anyway, my three shares in that restaurant are gone. So it is a difficult question that I believe the answer lies in the kind of resources that would be able to be committed to adding opportunity and you know, for small business in rural Minnesota.
Yeah, and if I could just wrap that up, we'll probably have a hearing or bills coming forward to address that, Representative Bly. Okay? Thank you. We're going to move to AURI. All right?
Good. Mr. Chair, we did have staff available for the Ag Research Education Extension and Technology Board.
They're going to have to come back. We're bumping them today. We're going to give AURI 15 minutes, and we're going to adjourn on time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. They'll be first up on Tuesday. Oh, yeah, Chair Anderson, while they're getting ready.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a special guest with us today in the chambers. Representative Pearson, would you tell us who you have with us today?
Well, thank you. I didn't even ask for that, but I would like to introduce my son to everyone. Marta Pearson is joining me today. He's up from Rochester, taking a day off from school so he can better understand where his dad goes every week for 10 weeks. So, Marta Shea Pearson.
Very nice.
It's a little sleepy.
All right, as soon as you're ready to go, state your name for the record and begin. You have 15 minutes. My apologies. I'm not sure if you need more than that, but 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, we want to thank you for this opportunity for a little education and introduction today. Today I'm here only to introduce our new executive director at AURI, Shannon Schlecht. Shannon has deep roots in agriculture, including policy influence, market development, international trade, strategic planning, and management. He grew up on a crop and livestock farm in southeastern North Dakota near Enderlin. He earned his bachelor and master's degrees in ag economics from NDSU. Shannon spent 14 years in different roles for U.S. Wheat Associates, a national trade organization that represented U.S. wheat producer interests in the industry with the main goal of developing export market opportunities. He, in fact, spent 4 years in Portland, Oregon, servicing Asian markets, 4 years in Cairo, Egypt, promoting U.S. wheat with millers, bakers, traders, government buyers across the 34-country region, and 5 years in the D.C. area working with USDA, USTR, and the agricultural industry to provide a perspective on policy development, biotechnology, regulatory impacts on the wheat and agriculture industry. He served as wheat industry representative to the USDA Secretary of Agriculture and U.S. Trade Representative for the Grains, Feed, Seed Oil, and Planting Seed Agricultural Trade Advisory Council, was liaison to multiple agricultural coalitions, and staff lead for national committees covering trade policy and biotechnology. During those years, he also worked closely with the Minnesota Wheat Growers and Research Promotion Council, and I hope over time you'll all get a chance to meet him personally. But today he wants to help you better understand what the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute is, what we do, who we do it with, and why it's still very important to agriculture and to Minnesota. Mr. Chair, our Executive Director, Shannon Schlecht.
Thank you so much. Please, welcome, state your name for the record, and begin.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shannon Schlecht, Executive Director of AURI. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your time today to provide this update of the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, what we have been doing and where we're headed as an organization going forward. First of all, I want to applaud your predecessors for creating this unique organization over 25 years ago. The work that it does to create new demand and new utilization is very unique from what I've seen in my experiences across the industry. And as we look at today's market situation for agriculture, the work of creating new demand, new disappearances is critically important to create higher farm gate prices and economic benefits to the state of Minnesota. So ARI services the entire state. This is just a quick graphic of where some of our clients have been located, both in the rural areas and across the urban areas of Minnesota. And we've worked with entrepreneurs, with small businesses, with different companies, with individuals, innovative ideas that are out there to try to move those ideas to the commercial reality and to have an economic impact for the state of Minnesota. We were established by statute as a 501c3 organization back in the 1980s. We have a 9-person board of directors. We have Mr. Ron Obermuller, who is the chair, representing soybeans, Art Bramley from Minnesota Wheat, Jerry Hasnettle from Farmers Union, John Gilbertson from Farm Bureau, Senator Matt Schmidt, Mr. John Goyle, representing Ag Business, of course, Representative Keel is a member of our board, John Schaefer from Minnesota Beef, and Jill Zula from Ag Business. I'd also like to recognize the chairman as a previous member of AURI and thank him for his service to our organization. Now, we've seen a lot of changes in the last roughly 6 months with two new directors coming on in February. Of course, my service began in the end of September. And there are many, many areas that we're exploring and looking at in terms of where we can have an impact, where we need to go, and what we can do for the state of Minnesota. As Dan mentioned, I did work with Minnesota Wheat in my previous role, and I look forward to working with all the commodity councils, the different organizations here in Minnesota to create an impact. It is an honor and a privilege to be with AURI. One of the changes that we made recently was updating the mission statement. And this has been tweaked over time, but it was in discussions with the board decided that it was time to simplify this, make it straightforward as to what is AURI, how do we explain what we're doing. And the new mission statement is foster long-term economic benefit for Minnesota through value-added agricultural products. So agricultural utilization is at the heart of our mission, as is the economic benefits, jobs creation, capital investment, all those key pieces that improve benefits for agricultural producers, for businesses, for the state of Minnesota. I've got a passionate staff that's fully dedicated to meeting that mission and to moving the organization forward in the state of Minnesota. So we have locations scattered throughout the state of Minnesota. Our headquarters is up in Crookston. We have offices in Marshall and Waseca, as well as in St. Paul. And then I have several virtual staff located throughout the state working on projects, providing that expertise to individuals to move ideas forward. That consists of staff having PhDs in different scientific fields, of a master's degree staff, of staff that have several years of private experience that can really hit the ground running and help move those ideas forward. So I'll just cover quickly each of our locations. We are required under our statute to maintain facilities to provide assistance to entrepreneurs and businesses in Minnesota. In Crookston, we focus on our microbiology efforts. I mentioned food there as well, but we're looking at transitioning that to our Marshall facility. We have a meat lab in Marshall, an analytical chemistry lab in Marshall, as well as a bioproducts lab in Marshall. So a lot of activity happening for us at the Marshall site that is located on the campus of SMSU. And then in Waseca, we are located at the Southern Outreach Research Center with the university, and we have a co-products lab there working on those secondary streams from egg processing to find new value, to find new demand, to create more economic opportunities for that main product that's being created. If you're ever in any of those facilities, please let Dan or I know. We'd be happy to have tours and give you a more of a hands-on demonstration of what we're doing in terms of that technical expertise and input that we provide. For AUI, we have a focused mission on value add and innovation, but that also covers a pretty diverse range of topics in agriculture. We've worked to put those into four buckets, basically. Those being bio-based products, renewable energy, food, and co-products. And as we look across the spectrum of projects and ideas that come to us, those usually fall into one of those four areas. We've divided our staff into teams, then they can look at those constructively and help move those ideas forward. We have roughly over 100 projects every year that we work on. And those projects in early years really focused on renewable energy and on the ethanol and the biodiesel work. Lately, we've really seen this trend towards food. And food is by far our major project emphasis today. It does not require as much labor and assistance in that sense, but it does require the capital equipment and the facilities to help move those ideas forward. We also work on initiatives. As we look at the work that ARI does, the client work is really hands-on, working with those businesses, one-on-one consultation and advice. And then we interview our stakeholders every year to look at where are some industry gaps, where are some information gaps that require a little bit more research, some technical research that we can provide to the industry to help move these big ideas forward. Roughly today, 80% of our work falls under the client sphere, 20% under the initiative sphere, is how we've divided our workflow within our strategic looking at how can we have the most impact for the state of Minnesota. I mentioned food before as a focus area. Food, really a lot of our work is in label guidance and nutrition. We look at product shelf life. What can we do to help get ideas onto the supermarket shelves? Dan will provide a sample of some of our food work from Hunkola, and we help them go from a two-day shelf life to a 90-day shelf life, for example. You can't have a conversation to get into the commercial space if you only have a two-day shelf life. And they went from a handful of cookies to roughly 5 million cookies of production per year, as one example. I know Representative Miller, if you need assistance with your cookies someday, please let us know as well. We do work on co-products, and these are the secondary streams, as I mentioned, trying to find new value, ways that we can make sure that there's an economic opportunity for that primary product that's in demand. And our lab in Waseca is a one-of-a-kind to really help move these ideas forward. Bio-based and renewable energy, this is another key area that we're spending time in terms of how we can really move these are replacements or substitutes of petrochemicals. And I look at Vector Windows, for example, where we help them replace a petro insulation to a soybean base. I look at Earth Clean, who is one of our Ag Innovators of the Year, to create a cornstarch and soybean oil-based fire retardant versus a petrochemical retardant. So ways that we can create more green products, use the commodities that are grown here in Minnesota to create new uses. Innovation networks is another key area that we're spending more time in. As you look at what it takes to move ideas forward, having those conversations and that access to industry leaders to bounce ideas around, to look at constraints and opportunities, and to really vet those, have those discussions, those network connections can really make a difference in trying to move those ideas forward. You have in front of you an annual report, and you should have also received a legislative report in February that lists some of the past successes that I'm not going to spend much time on today, but it will really give you a good snapshot of some of the key areas that ARI is working on or where we have worked in the past to help make an impact for Minnesota. One point that I do want to spend a little time on is back to this food focus area. As I said, it's by far our largest area of interest that we're receiving from prospective clients and from the industry. And we look at our facilities that we have at ARI, and they're in need of an upgrade to really service those entrepreneurs, those individuals that have ideas to really help create a product that the market is demanding and to get it to the market quicker. We put in a request for bonding at our Marshall location to upgrade our food services offering there. And that would be to develop a sensory lab to do a taste test comparisons with what's currently on the market or for different formulations to see what has the best consumer preferences. Developmental kitchen to help do that product development and scale up that's needed for food products, as well as some information upgrades and our safety upgrades, since that's one of our main analytical laboratories. Finally, just some of the impacts of, that ARI has had. This is a survey that was done over an eight-year period of what have we done. And this is, I would say, on the low side of some of the impacts, since it only represents about 15 to 20% of respondents. And we just use those numbers instead of trying to extrapolate. But commodity demand created from ARI activities, over 280,000 tons of commodities. We look at capital investment, over $414 million of capital investment from ARI activities. And you look at over 500 jobs created or retained. And again, I want to emphasize this is on the low end of estimates that I would see, and we look to update these figures for the committee in the coming year. Finally, we can't do the work that we do without partnerships. And the Research Promotion Councils, the entrepreneurial organizations, the initiative foundations, the state agencies, the federal agencies, private industry, of course, the Minnesota Legislature is a key partner for us, and of course, you, the agriculture committees. It's important for your support. We appreciate your support, and again, the impacts that we make would not happen without you. So I appreciate, again, the opportunity to be here. I realize this was a very quick overview, but we look forward to an open relationship with you and to the Minnesota agricultural community and industry. And I just want to emphasize, again, this is a really unique organization that I have not come across in my 15 years of being in the industry. It's a gem, and we look to really grow it and really create that impact with your assistance and with your guidance. So thank you very much.
Mr. Schleck, you finished with 3 minutes left. You're my new favorite. Just for the record, my new
thank
favorite.
You, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, just a quick question, and maybe this is for more discussion. Separate from the farm to school, are any of your grant opportunities or research focused on urban farming?
One of the areas that we have been meeting recently for urban greenhouses, we've had some discussions. We've looked a lot at co-location facilities in terms of aquaponics, hydroponics. We are doing research in that area. If that answers your question.
Continued. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clark. We have time for one more question before announcements. Anybody else have a question? The testifiers? Seeing none, thank you so much. You did a great job. Thank you.
Very good.
No, it was a fantastic overview.
Thank you, members, and get a treat on your way out.
Yes, we always appreciate that.
Successful clients.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Announcements. The other item on the agenda, the MDA Agri Report, will be next Tuesday. They'll be first on the agenda next week. Joint meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday. Ag policy and not ag finance will meet on Thursday. And what else? Oh, GOP members will meet in 400 North. And if you can put your agri report in your folder so that we can save on some time and some trees. Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative Poppy's not here, so I'll ask the question. I know in other committees we're starting to hear bonding requests.
Yes.
And just wondering for process, will we hear ag bonding requests in here
correct.
And then pass them on to bonding committee?
That is correct. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Yep, that's correct. And the other thing, Representative Hansen and I, we talked on the House floor yesterday. If there's things that are important to you that you would like a hearing on or some things that we need to be looking at, please reach out to me. I try to touch base with all of you, but if I miss somebody, I apologize. So thank you for that. With that, members, we are adjourned.